Chapter 51. Jack 8. Jack's son Valano, truthless of Shinovar, felt a slight and discomforting surge of satisfaction at his failed mission. For the first time, Jack had been unable to fulfill his master's will. Not that he hadn't tried to locate the Lady Yasna. Jack's sense of honor was absolute. He could not sabotage his mission intentionally. He was required to use all of his facilities to serve his master's will, for that was what truth demanded. This time, however, no amount of competence had been enough to bring success. Perhaps the Lady Yasna had avoided Jack's scouts, or perhaps they had missed her by simple luck. More likely, she hadn't gone northward at all. Jack had done a fairly thorough search of the area, extending as far toward Crossguard as he dared, and his scouts had discovered no trace of her passing. Regardless, the woman was safe from Jack's blade. The satisfaction of guiltless failure gave him a brief smile as he rode beside his master, their horses marching at the head of the Vaden Honor Guard. Avon looked troubled, and he had a right to be. From all accounts, the Lady Yasna was a masterful tactician. She would waste little time bringing news of Ral Aram's fall to her brother. Avon's success was by no means guaranteed. Alethkar was wearied from war, true, but it was also armed with the spoils that came from a successful invasion. In addition, Avon's army didn't represent the entirety of Vaden might. He only had command of those armies that Talshech had been able to raise. If King Elokar were warned in time, there was a chance he could escape Avon's offensive, withdrawing to gather support and leaving the Vaden forces exposed in the center of a hostile kingdom. Unfortunately, Jack had little practical knowledge of large-scale tactics. His clan was, or rather had been, the Nailan Thotath, a clan of the knife. His training was not in battlefield warring. While he had the practical leadership training of any Shin Lord, basic command skills focusing on small squad leadership, his true focus had been in the arts of stealthy killing. The Nailan Thotath won wars by executing the enemy commanders, as honorable a method as any other in the eyes of the Shin. It had always amused Jack that the Easterners considered themselves too honorable to overtly use assassination as a practical method of warfare. Oddly, despite their sensibilities, the men who came into possession of Jack's bondstone seemed to have few qualms about using him to further their plans. Jack kept to his thoughts as Avon's party left through Ral Aram's massive steel gates and began down the extended stone path leading toward the mountain's base. There was so much stone. Moving away from the cliffside as they were, Jack suddenly became aware of the oppressive mountain looming above. The troop of men wound its way down the ramp-like path, cliffs to either side, leaving the first capital behind on its ledge-like plateau, sheltered in a massive rock crevasse. Was it any wonder that the Easterners didn't understand the sacredness of stone? There was so much of it here in the East that even Jack often found himself treating it as a mundane substance. He could almost forgive their heresies at times. Of course, at other times he felt overly sensitive to the desecrated rock around him, as if he feared losing his sense of truth and could only maintain a hold on it through exaggerated piousness. Could there even be piousness to one such as he? "There is no truth in this world," Avon had claimed. The words had stayed with Jack all through his hunt for the Lady Yasna. What good was truth when it led Jack to commit atrocities? What good was honor when it gave a terrible man like Avon such a marvelous tool in a Shin assassin? Jack had considered similar questions beneath other Eastern masters, but never had a master pushed him as harshly as Avon did. Blood dripped from Jack's fingers even when they were clean. He knew that this very guilt was the purpose behind his punishment, a fitting judgment for one such as he. But had the Holotental really understood the extent to which these Easterners were willing to go? Several hours of riding didn't provide any answers. Jack spent them in silence, the air growing increasingly hot as they descended the mountain. Yet the heat was different here in the east. It was drier, especially in the summer. Here in the east, the searing was a dangerous time. Groundwater was tainted and undrinkable, and rivers were low even within lakes. Jack glanced up at the sky and the angry sun overhead, glad that he wasn't a peasant living in one of the many remote Rosharan villages. Avan didn't seem to mind the heat. He rode quietly, his ease on horseback just another item on the list of his educational irregularities. The king must have learned to ride in the same place he learned to wield a shard blade and to perform a masterful oration. The quiet Ilinra brothers kept their distance from the idiot king, probably to keep suspicions to a minimum. Yet once Jack determined to watch for them, he easily began to pick out signs of Avan's silent companions. There were some soldiers who hung too close to the idiot king, some minor couriers who were given too much leeway in the workings of the court and army, some supposed stormkeepers who held conferences with Avan that even Jack could not attend. Each of these revealed an Ilinra tattoo on his shoulder or forearm. The marks were easy to miss and even easier to hide, but Jack was trained to see that which others overlooked. Most people wouldn't have made the connection. Ilinra were growing more common amongst even the upper class, especially in Vaidenar, and the tattoos were hardly irregular. However, after what Jack had seen in the temple of Nael Ilin, he could not ignore the coincidence. As for the other things he had seen, well, he was not yet convinced. The children had acted like onyx seers, true, but it was not so difficult a thing to mimic descriptions from records or stories. Besides, the alternative was almost too unsettling to consider. Avan was an evil enough force on his own. If he were backed by the Hulkaltop, the powers called Ipelian in the east, then he would present a danger such as Roshar had rarely known. As nightfall loomed, Avan's caravan approached his aggregated armies. The group was gathered in a secure valley and was well camouflaged for a force so large. Even Jack's keen eyes had trouble discerning its presence from a distance. Of course, no amount of hiding would keep their secret if Lady Yasna reached Crossguard. And she wasn't the only danger. A passing merchant train, the eyes of a wandering peasant, any number of passing coincidences could doom Avan's expedition.
"You were right," Jack said. "You need to move quickly. The armies are committed. Any more hesitance could doom the invasion."
Avan looked up, eyeing Jack. The words were the first either had spoken during the 5-hour ride.
"Lord Devar still thinks we're moving too hastily," the idiot king noted. "He wanted to hold Ral Aram and gather strength, forcing Elokar to come to us."
Jack shook his head.
"The first rule of assassination is surprise," he said. He turned, meeting Avan's eyes. "And that is exactly what you are doing, trying to assassinate an entire army."
Avan cocked his head, then smiled deeply at the analogy.
"Well put," he said, kicking his horse forward.
Jack followed, guiding his horse down a short incline toward the army's sheltered hiding place. There were some 50,000 men in the force, a considerable number, though they were forced to travel without archer towers. Avan kept a 10 set of awakeners to provide food and water for the men, and there were an impressive 60 shard-bearers in the troop. From the latest reports, King Elokar would be hard-pressed to provide 3/4 their numbers, even if the battle for Crossguard had gone well. Avan's pavilion lay in the nobleman's quarter of the camp, and he rode toward it with a reaffirmed regal air, daring show no fatigue despite the extended ride. Soldiers paused in their chores as the king passed, their eyes showing excited realization. Avan's arrival marked the end of waiting.
The king wouldn't have left the safety of Rel Aram unless he intended to attack. The captains wouldn't give the order to disassemble the camp until the following morning, but only the dull-minded or unobservant would be caught surprised. They reached the royal pavilion, and Jack climbed off his horse, annoyed at the slight soreness he still felt after his extended ride searching for Lady Yasna. No Shin man should suffer from going horseback. His people raised and trained most of the beasts ridden here in the east. Yet forced to serve another's will as he was, Jack often didn't have time for daily riding exercises. He either spent his days in continuous riding to fulfill some assassination order, or he spent them cramped within one blasphemous stone room or another. There was no moderation. Jack stretched, then followed Avon and the king's bodyguards into the royal tent. Someone was waiting for them. Jack reached the intruder first, of course. He snapped across the pavilion's rug, drawing his yanakatakat before the guards even realized the room was occupied. Jack positioned himself between the intruder and Avon, reflexively moving to protect the man who was his enslaver and had his long-bladed knife at the intruder's neck within 3 heartbeats. The old man did not flinch. He sat pleasantly in Avon's chair as if unconcerned about the blade pressed against his skin. Avon regarded the intruder with curious eyes that showed only a shade of worry. He pushed back the tent flap, waving for one of the door guards to enter.
"Did you let this man in?" he asked the soldier.
The guard paled.
"My lord, no! We let no one pass!"
Avon nodded, waving the soldier away. The king turned back toward the intruder, his expression growing even more intrigued. The intruder said nothing. Jack held his knife still, his muscles tense. There was something strange about the intruder, something subtly unnatural about the way the man had remained motionless as Jack struck. In appearance, the intruder was mostly unremarkable. He was irregularly straight-backed for his age, and his silver hair was full and well-groomed. His wrinkled skin was aged, but his body wasn't decrepit. He looked more stately than he did elderly.
"I feel like I should recognize you, old man," Avon noted carefully. "We have never met, Avon Vedenel," the intruder said, the movements of his jaw pressing his neck against Jack's blade and drawing blood. "Though I have watched you for some time. Taking Alethkar is a bold move, one I had always hoped you would attempt."
Avon stood thoughtfully for a moment, studying the intruder before finally adopting a confused expression.
"You're the old Aleth King's stormkeeper," he said, "the one called Balin Mar."
The intruder, Balin Mar, nodded slightly, though Jack's knife kept the motion to a minimum.
"Where is the Lady Yasna?" Avon asked, taking a step forward.
"I hear that she escaped into the caves beneath the city," Balin Mar said. "She was always a clever child."
"You did not go with her?" Avon asked.
"No."
"Then how did you escape my soldiers?"
The intruder simply smiled.
"You are an interesting man, Avon Vedenel," he said. "Whether you are clever or foolhardy, I have yet to determine. Either way, I have decided that I can be of use to you, so I have come to offer my services as an advisor."
Avon snorted.
"You expect me to trust a man who so easily betrays his homeland in favor of its invader?"
Balin Mar shrugged.
"Trust? No. I don't expect your trust. But do you trust the would-be king who fights at your side, a man barely quelled by the prospect of a grandson on the throne? How about the Shin assassin who holds his knife so diligently at my throat, a man who would betray you without thought if you happened to misplace his bondstone? Do you really trust anyone around you, Avon Vedenel? What is trust to a man like you?"
"True," Arvin admitted. But each of those you describe, trustworthy or not, brings me an edge I could not otherwise obtain. You, however, have a very poor record as an adviser. King Nola Norrin lies in the catacombs of Rel Arum, dead at the hand of his best friend, and his son is about to fall to my armies. Your advice seems to have been of little productive use.
Balinmore snorted.
I'm an informant, not a bodyguard, he said. Besides, neither man, son or father, had keen enough ears for my suggestions. If they had listened, perhaps they would still live. Don't make their same mistake.
Jack could tell, however, that Arvin was no longer paying attention. The king's eyes had moved away from the captive man's lips, and he was thinking carefully to himself. Would Arvin execute the old man, torture him, or simply hold him for later purposes? Jack thought he knew which Arvin would choose. The idiot king was not fond of loose ends or of men who knew too much about him.
I can give you your Snekolin,
Balinmar said idly. Jack glanced toward Arvin and saw that the king had noticed the words.
There are only a few exits from those caverns, Balinmar continued. They all open out onto the eastern side of the mountain. Too far from Crossguard to be of use to King Elikar, but dangerously close to Kolinar. What do you think, Arvin Vadenel? Can your armies face both Elikar and Dalinar at once? Elikar might be a fool, but his reckless temper should not be underestimated. How would your army fare against Elikar's ferocity if the calm rock of the Tyrant Bane were pressing you from the east?
You can tell my men how to get through the caverns, Arvin asked.
Bring in a scribe, Balinmar said. I'll give precise directions.
Arvin didn't move immediately. Eventually, the lure proved too great, and he waved for a soldier to relay the message. Then the king nodded to Jack, who slowly lowered the blade from the old man's neck. Balinmar smiled pleasantly, pulling out a handkerchief and carefully wiping the trickle of blood from his neck.
What do you ask in return for this knowledge? Arvin asked, eyes still suspicious.
Nothing you aren't already willing to give, Balinmar said.
Be more specific, Arvin ordered.
Balinmar's affable smile didn't leave his eyes as he spoke.
Just make certain your men kill Lady Yasna and her companions on sight. None of them must survive.